Welcome to PRN's Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm Steve Linden. My guest today is Sybil Edmonds. Sybil is founder of National Security Whistleblowers Coalition. The National Security Whistleblowers Coalition. I sure want to get that right for Sybil, absolutely. Bit of a tongue twister at times, if you say. Try saying it fast three times. Anyway, Sybil did it to aid national security whistleblowers through a variety of methods. Sybil also is founder and editor of the BoilingFrogsPost.com website. It features vital news information and analysis. Her books include Classified Woman, The Sybil Edmonds Story. She has a forthcoming one, I believe it's still forthcoming. I'll let Sybil bring me up to date on it, called Shooting the Messenger. It's co-authored with Professor William Weaver. Well, Sybil certainly is very, very up on whistleblower issues. It's a vital issue for her. It's a vital issue for me. It should be a vital issue for everyone. Certainly, Edward Snowden is in the spotlight now. So is in Bradley Manning. And we know what's going on with them. We'll discuss more. Sybil, welcome to the program. It's great to have you on.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you for having me.
Where shall we begin? Shall we talk about Edward Snowden? We know that Venezuela offered him asylum. We believe that Bolivia and Nicaragua virtually did. I say virtually because it's a little less official than the way President Nicolas Maduro of Venezuela made the announcement. Of course, getting from Moscow to wherever his final destination is not a simple matter. We know what happened to Evo Morales, a president of Bolivia, traveling home from Moscow and France and Italy and Portugal. What was the other country? One other country denied Morales airspace and landing rights. Spain, I guess I left out Spain. He was forced to land in Vienna. I'm unclear whether the plane was searched or not. It was Vienna authorities ordered it to be searched. Morales denied. He refused the request. And I saw some reports that the plane was searched. Whether it was or not, I'm not sure. Sybil, do you know anything more about that?
Every single hour we are getting more information of what's taking place. And even though it seems like we are getting a lot of information, I need to point out to people that we are actually not. As you know, nobody has seen Mr. Snowden for weeks. He has not had any public appearance. Nobody has spotted him in Russia. So a lot of things that we are getting, they are secondary information or the information sources. And I think it takes away grandly from the real issue here and what we are facing and what the real issue is, because a lot of people are getting lost in the details of, you know, who said what and now what is Russia saying. But if you look at the big picture here, this is one of those major historical points, and it's as much about this whistleblower and the information that he exposed, which is, again, extremely important, but as much it's about him, then it's about us, the people. And, you know, a lot of people nowadays talk about, write about, make movies about, you know, what took place in Germany. You know, this is what Hitler and Hitler's army did. And some end up focusing on people and say, well, how was this allowed to be carried out? And when you look at the biggest culprit, you know, throughout the history, when we have atrocities or massive, wrongdoings or turning points, we also always look at the people and say, well, what did the people do during this particular period or when this particular incident took place. It goes beyond just government or when we have some heroes such as Snowden or when we are talking about the villains, but we have to talk about the people. And to me right now, the most outrageous thing that I see is the apathy from the American. I mean, all these events. Okay, it's almost surreal, everything that is happening. But then let's pause and ask ourselves, what is happening with the people? And that should be the most important thing people should be, especially activists, should be focusing on. And for me, that is the most troubling aspect, because I have been a whistleblower. I was a whistleblower. I came forward 11 and a half years ago. I was declared the most gagged woman in the history of the United States by the ACLU. And, you know, the Bush administration invoked the state secrets privilege. They actually gagged the Congress and prevented the Congress from holding hearing on my case. So I have gone through some of these whistleblowing experiences with some extreme measures being taken by the government to silence me, to prevent the information from coming out. And none of those measures up against Bradley Manning case or Edward Snowden's case or with Thomas Drake, he ended up going to court. They were going to send him to jail. And currently we have other whistleblowers who are sitting in jail. So what we see is this escalation, this continuous escalation of the government upping the price that a whistleblower is going to be subjected to once he dares or she dares bringing forth information. And then the next thing that we realize is the only way for this to happen, okay, for the government to keep escalating is for people to do nothing, okay, the apathetic attitude of the nation. Because when the governments do this, let's start with the Bush administration, you know, they impose this gag order. Let's say they did it. I'm one of the first whistleblowers, the first five coming out during the Bush administration, okay? And there is a gag order issued. Then they wait. They see, okay, this what we did is unconstitutional. We know that. But let's see what kind of outrage we're going to get and how much further we can push it. So you always have the tyrannical governments, a dictator or king, doing something, stepping back, watching to see what's going to happen, what's going to follow this action, whether it's the illegal action or it's some sort of an atrocity. And if there is not really any action, and for that, I always refer to this notion of the entire village. It takes an entire village, and that is the media, that's the U.S. media, it's the Congress, it's the courts, and of course, it's we the people, okay? Then they say, well, that was pretty easy. We got away with that. Next time, let's give them a better lesson, bigger lesson. We're going to up that, okay? We're going to bring, criminal charges against this person. The next time, we are going to jail and torture the person, let's say in this case, Bradley Manning. So for it to happen and escalate, it just doesn't happen, you know, like a free float kind of a thing out there. It goes together with what is happening with the people, what is the reaction of the people, what is happening with the media, and supposedly we have a representative government, and supposedly we have this notion of separation of powers, therefore what's happening with the courts or what's happening with the Congress. Now, if you put in front of you, Steve, the last 12 years, okay, take a look at dozens of courageous government whistleblowers who have come forward to, and when I say come forward, initially, let's say even with my case or 99% of the whistleblowers who are the members of my organizations, and I have over 100 national security whistleblowers from the CIA, from the DOD, from FBI, from the Department of Homeland Security. On average, our whistleblowers have 20 to 22 years of experience working for these agencies, okay? And these people, they didn't go to the media and leak documents to start with. back then, and this is during my whistleblowing time, there we were green. We were still very naive. We believed in this, in the existence of this appropriate channels that we, the whistleblowers, should go, and these appropriate procedures that we, the whistleblowers, should follow. Well, these are the guidelines that the government puts out there. These are the guidelines that the media advertise for, even though they are non-existent. And the experiences have proved that, because I am included in this. Dozens of whistleblowers, we did go to entities such as the Inspector General's office for our agencies, okay, before we went public. We did go to the Congress, to the appropriate committee. In my case, I had to go to Senate Judiciary Committee, the House Judiciary Committee. In the cases of my NSA and CIA whistleblowers, they went to the Intelligence Committee in the House and the Senate. And I went to court, and I filed in court trying to get the courts, the federal courts, and I went all the way up to the Supreme Court. So if you look at these 10, 12 years of these escalations with whistleblowers, you will see that we've never had a single case where the United States Congress took documents and information from legitimate whistleblowers and took an action upon it, based on the information given, whether it's the first time when Russell Tice went to the Senate Intelligence Committee in 2004 and presented them with information and documents about NSA's illegal eavesdropping, whether it was my case going to the Senate Judiciary Committee, giving them all the information. For God's sake, I even had an Inspector General's office issuing a report saying I was vindicated, I was right. They supposedly investigated it for 2 years, and all the witnesses and documents said everything I claimed was correct. Nothing. You will not see a single case where the United States Congress has taken appropriate action based on information given to them by these whistleblowers. By this point, they are not public whistleblowers. We actually start blowing the whistle inside the agency, going to Congress, to IG. Going to public always used to be the last resort, and it was futile. What I did was wrong, but I learned from it. Same thing with dozens of whistleblowers who believed in these so-called channels, the appropriate procedures to disclose information and wrongdoing or government criminal actions, waste, fraud, abuse. Same thing with dozens and dozens of these internal whistleblowers. You look at the federal courts, Steve, okay? In the past 11 years, you find a single case where the federal court sides with a whistleblower and the criminals, in this case, the government, is punished. You don't see that. On federal courts, the Supreme Court, they are the extension of the executive branch. They have been acting as the extension of the executive branch, okay? So whether the courts or the IGs or the Congress, you will not be able to find a single instance where a whistleblower does what the government says the whistleblowers should do, go to the appropriate channels, okay, guard the secret documents, even though they shouldn't be secret in the first place. There is actually an executive order. There is a law that says the executive branch shall not classify documents in order to cover up criminalities or government waste, fraud, abuse. Okay? Nobody ever talks about this. So if the executive branch is in charge of saying this material is classified, is secret, there is no one out there to come and say, is it really classified because it should be classified? It deserves to be classified. It qualifies as something that has to be classified and be kept secret from the public? Or is it some criminal, big-time boo-boo by the government that people have the right to know, but it's being classified so that people won't get to see it and they won't get outraged, so they won't have action, so the government can go on and engage in criminalities? There is no entity out there overseeing this. The executive branch is the sole power in charge of secrecy and classification. So in my case, Steve, they went to the court, to the Supreme Court. This is the United States government under the Bush administration. And they said everything about Sybelle Edmonds is classified, including the date of her birth and her place of birth and which universities she attended and what degrees she has. I mean, this information exists everywhere in my resume. My driver's license has my birth, you know, my date of birth. But you know what? The federal government sided with the government. Yet they didn't take away my passport or my driver's license. So I'm going around with these documents that the government says they are secret. It's my driver's license. It has my DOB. And they say, the government says my DOB is classified. Okay? So you see how ridiculous it is. Now back to what I was just saying about Snowden. So they escalated it, our government. I'm thinking if I had done what I did during the Bush administration, during the Obama administration, I would be maybe in Guantanamo right now. Maybe I was lucky that I came forward during the Bush administration. At the time, I thought it was horrific. The fact that the government of the United States went against the Constitution and issued gag orders on Congress, they invoked the state secrets privilege in my case, I didn't think it could get even worse than this. I was wrong. And we are seeing that it's been escalating, escalating, and now we are seeing what we are seeing with Snowden. And why is this escalating and why it's happening? It's because throughout this 10, 12 years, as the government has been taking these, you know, atrocious measures against the truth tellers, against the whistleblowers, there has never been consequences for the government, neither by the media nor by the people. And therefore, what is happening today to Bradley Manning and what is happening today to Snowden, what happened to Thomas Drake, for that we really need to turn around and look at us, okay? I can give thousands of reasons why it's beneficial for the kings, for the monarchs, for the dictators, for the United States criminal presidents to do what they have been doing to the whistleblowers, including to Bradley Manning and Snowden, and why they are doing it. But I cannot sit here and find any sensible reason for the people, for the American public, not to get outraged, not to stand up, and not to fight against this. That is where I'm stuck at, Steve. And that was a long answer to a question that I should have had maybe some more eloquent or shorter answer.
Oh, no, your answer and your elaboration was very important, Sybil. I remember you going back over a decade, and you were the first one that I thought of in the whistleblower category. You were very heroic, and you certainly were muzzled. And the title of your book, Classified Woman, really said it well. Oliver Stone should make a film and star you in the leading role, Sybil. That would be a marvelous film. Maybe he'll do that. Oliver, if you ever listen to this program, I hope you'll look into that possibility. Be a marvelous, marvelous story for you to film. And I agree with what you said, Sybil. What you said was extremely important as far as the American public literally dismissive of what's going on. I rail about this. I moan about this all the time. And it was Edmund Burke who said long ago that the only way evil triumphs is when good people do nothing. When good people, nothing. The people have the ultimate power, and if people want to use it, they can stop these abuses. They can change things because the government doesn't have guns enough to go up against the power of the people when they want to use it. And I don't mean violently. I simply mean the will to resist legitimately, including by civil disobedience, which is a very noble American tradition, and I believe a tradition in other countries. So I absolutely believe in civil disobedience. I don't believe in going out and shooting people in the streets, but we have been grossly abused. Our rights are being systematically destroyed. Whistleblowers are really heroic figures to come forth and tell people what they need to know. We need a legion of whistleblowers, Sybil. We need so many people to explain things to people. At the same time, they can explain things till the cows jump over the moon. And if people don't do anything about it, you know, it's like talking to the wall. So you and I share the same frustration.
No, absolutely. And of course, the media has been playing a central role in this. And I'm talking about the mainstream media and what I refer to usually as the pseudo-alternative media. They take the attention away from these real macro topics, macro cases, and their even further macro implications. And they sidetrack people with either, you know, Snowden's personal life or you know, how this is actually going to be benefiting our enemies, whether it's China or Russia. It is the media, the United States media, and to a certain degree, even the academia here, that they shape, they channel, they take these events and they distort it and they give it to the public in a, you know, in this distorted form. And that is another big thing that we right now have the leverage advantage on, and that is today we have the internet. Today you can have this show. Today I can put out these video and the podcast interviews on my website and say, well, I am going to be an alternative. I'm going to do something about it. I'm going to counter the misinformation, the propaganda being put out by the mainstream media with what I'm doing. Yet, it, as you said, it is frustrating because most of the time, I feel like I'm preaching to the choir because those people who are tuning into your show, those people who are tuning into our shows and reading our articles, they are one of us. They are already awake. I mean, I moved last year to this beautiful city, Bend, Oregon. It's supposed to be very progressive, and it is. In many respects, it is. But so I'm surrounded in my neighborhood with these people who are highly educated. You know, they have master's degree or even higher degrees, PhDs. They consider themselves really kind of progressive and in tune with everything. Most of them, when I say, well, what do you think about Snowden case? And I even say, they don't know anything about it. And to me, and it's been almost a month, it's been 3 weeks. One of the ladies who lives two blocks from me, she used to work for Mother Jones. She was one of their fact checkers, and then she ended up starting her family and moved here. She didn't know anything 4 days ago about Snowden. She said, oh, that some whistleblower who's now who's in China and giving our secrets to China. I said, no, there is no such a thing. That is not the case. So you got to look at it that way, or even with some of the, but that's why I call them the quasi-alternative media, we have to really watch out, and I'm saying it as someone who has gone through the process as a whistleblower, but also who has represented over 100 whistleblowers in the past 11 years, and that is, if you look at what happened between Guardian and WikiLeaks, okay, Julian Assange, Guardian was one of the first partners of WikiLeaks' Julian Assange, and he gave them all the documents, and they promised them they were going to put all this information out there and publish everything. Once they got everything from him, and during this time they were really being very positive about Assange and WikiLeaks, then they started, and this is one of the so-called more progressive, lesser mainstream media outlets from the United Kingdom, and then they said, they started censuring. They started saying, we will not run this particular document or that particular document. Then they had this fallout, and Guardian then turned against Julian Assange and WikiLeaks and started putting the most damning articles against the same man that they partnered up with. So that brings another huge obstacle for government whistleblowers or whistleblowers-to-be, because we get contacted several times a week by people who say, I have this information, I need guidance, what should I do, where should I go, who should I present this information to, okay? Well, we know by experience what happened with the AT&T whistleblower, Mark Klein. He went to LA Times. He gave them the documents. They promised they were going to run it. And the reporter was a good guy, but the reporter's editor and the editor-in-chief, you know what they did, Steve? They took the information and they gave it to Nancy Pelosi and they sent it to the NSA. They actually turned on, and they never published it. After that, he went to the New York Times. This is 6 months after he gave the information to LA Times, and LA Times leaked this to the government. They didn't publish it. And same thing with the New York Times. They sat on that AT&T expose, massive scandal, that illegality, that unconstitutional police state practice for over a year. They waited out the elections for George W. Bush. They sat on this, and only after a year they were forced to put it out because one of their reporters were going to put it out in his book. Same thing with Washington Post. Ed Snowden went several weeks before he went to Guardian, he went to Washington Post. Same thing happened. They said they were not going to run it. So we already discussed it at the beginning of this show about the fact that the so-called channels don't exist. Congress has been the extension of the same tyranny. The same thing with the federal courts. You can't go there. It's futile. The mainstream media, they will be the one who are going to turn you in, then sit on that document. Not only that, you're going to end up in a jail, but your information is not going to become public. So where do you go? Let's say you are a conscientious person. And I agree with Daniel Ellsberg. He's been asking, he's been calling, and he's been insisting, and he's been begging people to take information, make it public, and keep exposing, keep bringing down this veil of this tyrannical entities who have hijacked our nations. But the question boils down to, you have the information, you have the guts, you have the conscience. Where do you go? How do you make it public? What is the best way for a to-be whistleblower to make government criminality known? You know, that is where we are stuck currently, because when people come to us, they say, don't go to New York Times, don't go to Washington Post. You definitely don't want to go to Congress. And then the question comes down to, where do you go? Where do you really go? And again, that comes back to our original notion, saying that, again, it starts with the people and it will end with the people. So the determinants of this is going to be the people. And we are not even close yet, Steve, in terms of getting people, raising awareness, and translating this awareness into action. Because we started our website 3-4 years ago, and we have pretty good-sized readership, followers, but we are pointing to all the things that are wrong constantly. You are doing it. We are doing it. There are dozens of really good independent alternative media sites on the web. They are doing it. And the initial objective was, we have to start by informing people. So we've been doing it for all these years, and my goodness, we don't have the shortage of scandals. Whether it's the torture, whether it is the bailout of these financial banks criminals, whether it's the Snowden, whether it's Thomas Drake, whether it's the billions of dollars of worth contracts being abused by the contractors, these big, massive corporations that have been colluding with our government, they are running our government. So we have had tons of scandals. Tons of information has been placed out there, and we have this group that I refer to as the irate minority. We really don't need the majority, Steve. It's never been the majority. It's always been, you know, this irate, minute, small group who are determined, okay, who end up taking the lead, who end up taking the risk, who are doing it. It's really never been the majority. If you think about it, when have we seen something being done by the entire majority? It's always the lead is by people, it's that handful of irate minority. But it is time, it's way past time to start translating this into actionable items to say, here is the problem. This is what they are doing to Snowden. This is how they are covering up this information. And this is what we should be doing. And then we'll talk about the various things people can do, because in many cases, people feel powerless. I'm talking about good activists. Because it's easy. I get to that point several times a week. I get so disgusted. I get so discouraged. I just want to throw everything out, saying, just heck with it. I keep at it, and I'm not getting anywhere. Things are getting worse. But a few hours later, I have to remind myself and say, what is the alternative? I have a daughter. She's 5 years old. This is for me. This is for her. This is, and I lived under tyrannical governments. Steve, I lived in Iran under Shah, which was far more tyrannical than the current regime, the current government. That's another thing Americans would not know, thanks to the media and the academia and the Hollywood industry. They believe this is the real suffocating regime. Well, I tell you what, I lived under Shah's regime. My father lived under Shah's regime. And he was tortured by Shah regime. As a surgeon, his toenails were pulled by Shah regime. Do you know why? Because he had Steinbeck in his library, and it was considered a communist book. For that reason, they pulled my father's toenails, and this was the Shah regime. But you won't hear that, because that was our government-installed puppet regime in Iran.
Indeed, so we need to take a break, Sybil, and we'll come right back. In Franklin Roosevelt's terminology, the Shah of Iran for 25 years was our SOB. He was an SOB, but he was our SOB. Let's take a short break, and we'll come right back. Welcome back. Talking with Sybil Edmonds, one of the, I shouldn't say the original whistleblower, the original post-9/11 whistleblower. Of course, we know about Daniel Ellsberg, and I guess throughout U.S. and world history, there have been lots of whistleblowers. They may not have been called that, but people who told the truth, the things that people need to know, you can call them whistleblowers, you can call them anything you want. Sybil, people ask me all the time, what can I do, when they're not saying to me, I'm just one person, what on earth can I do all by myself? My answer to that one is everybody can do something. The one thing not to do is to do nothing, sit in your can, and just say, I'm just one person, I can't do anything, because everybody can do something. And as far as what to do, it starts with getting informed. It's not hard to do. Tune out the so-called news channels, the CNNs and the Foxes and the CBSs, the whole lot of them, the broadcasters, the cable channels. They don't give you news. They give you managed news misinformation. That's the way to describe it. Misinformation, disinformation. They give you rubbish. They give you junk food news when they should be giving you real, real information. The New York Times, nearly always, does exactly the same thing. The New York Times, I like to say, is the closest thing to an official ministry of propaganda in America. Its message gets carried on a global basis, so it's very, very important. The Washington Post also. These are establishment papers. They serve the interests of the state. They serve the corporate interest. And they do other things that make themselves look like they're acting responsibly. But beneath the surface, make no mistake about it, they support wealth, power, and privilege. As far as the good alternative sites, Sybil, you said it well. There are wonderful ones, and there are pseudo ones. And unfortunately, some of the most popular ones are the pseudo ones to be avoided, not to be followed. How do you find them out? Trial and error. Trial and error. Global research. Go ahead,
and
Sybil.
See, one other good point is, even though some of them, these pseudo channels, they don't advertise where their funding comes from, I would really encourage people to look at the funding of where the funding comes for this particular popular, let's say, so-called alternative, and then ask themselves, why would those sources fund and pour in millions, hundreds of thousands, or millions of dollars? That is a great place to start, because I always do that. It's an exercise. I go, and even if it's not there, I conduct a search, research on the net, and I figure out, and I say, okay, why would Rockefeller and Rockefeller Foundation give $285,000 a year to this alternative, since when they have the best interest of the public in mind? Or why would George Soros do this? Or I would ask why the particular partisan group, whether it's the Republican Party or the Democratic Party, put in funding via their various sub-channels into this particular alternative, so-called alternative. Once you start doing that, it becomes easy because I now do it automatically. Somebody sends me a link, and I'm like, I want to find out if they are legit, if are they real or not. The first thing I look at is, where is the funding coming from?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
No free lunches.
follow the money, Sybil. They don't give money. The Soroses and the Ford Foundations and the Rockefellers and the rest of them, their money comes with strings. It also goes to organizations like Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch, and occasionally they do some good stuff, but the good stuff is way, way outweighed by their support beneath the surface for the things that they absolutely should oppose, like they back Washington's war on Syria. If that isn't a red flag to say watch out for these people, the war on Syria absolutely is Washington's war. It was planned at least a decade ago, I believe back in the 1990s. It was just a matter of when they were going to start pulling the triggers. The war is going on with proxy U.S. death squads, invaders, savaging Syrian people. Israel's involved in it. The rogue Arab states, the Saudis, the Qataris, Jordan, Bahrain, they have their own problems to deal with. These are the people involved who want to destroy freedom. And when Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch lines up behind these people, you know that they are very, very tainted. And you're right, Sybil. Millions and millions of dollars go to these organizations, and it goes to them to support the things that these people want, their agenda, the imperial agenda, the corporate agenda. These are the things that we need to oppose. And I would say as far as the power of the people, Sybil, Margaret Mead said it very well many years ago. It only takes a few committed people to change the world. She said it a little bit more elaborately than that. And her tagline was, it's the only way the world has ever changed. If you expect government to serve the people, you're living in a dream world. Once in a while it happens. It happens in Venezuela. But Venezuela is an exception that proves the rule. There's not another country like Venezuela. It doesn't happen in any Western country at all. It certainly doesn't happen in America. America wasn't founded to make it happen that way. America was not founded to be a democracy. John Jay, the first Supreme Court Chief Justice, John Adams, the second president of the country, basically said the same thing. The country should be run by the people who own it. And Adams used language like by the rich, the well-born, and the able. That's just about a direct quote. These are the people they wanted to run the country. We the people meant them. It didn't mean us. The Bill of Rights were for them. They weren't written for us. The so-called checks and balances, they're illusory. There are no checks and balances. And in times of war, the president is a virtual dictator. Roosevelt in World War II was a dictator. Woodrow Wilson, both members of the Democrat Party, they were in World War I. Wilson was a dictator. You expect George Bush to be any less? Do you expect Obama to be any less? It's gotten much worse now than it was then, that's for sure. But this is the way America was designed. This is the way it is today. But it's much, much worse now than it ever was, with all of the faults that America had in the 19th century, the earlier 20th century, up to and even including World War II, the weapons they had, including World War II and after, were toys compared to what they have now. Literally, the world could end in less than a day, maybe in a few hours. If they dropped enough bombs, it certainly would end very, very quickly. And if it didn't, the nuclear winter would take a little bit longer, maybe take days, maybe take weeks. And if anybody ever gets the chance to see a movie that came out in the 1950s, I'm not a movie fan, but I sure recommend this one. It starred Fred Astaire, Gregory Peck, and Ava Gardner. Fred Astaire did no tap dancing in this movie. He played a deadly serious role, and at the end of the film, he committed suicide. Have you ever seen a film where Fred Astaire committed suicide? The film is called On the Beach. It turned Helen Caldicott into an anti-nuclear activist. You could call her a nuclear activist, an anti-nuclear activist, and that includes reactors as well as military nuclear weapons, bombs. And she calls nuclear reactors, quote-unquote, atom bomb factories. sadly, they produce plutonium, they produce enriched uranium. They're atom bomb factories. So if you have one of these things and you want to make an atom bomb or a hydrogen bomb, you can do it. Doesn't mean that you will. A lot of these are reactors around. A handful of countries decided to make bombs. But this is the threat we face today, plus all kinds of other real weapons of mass destruction. There are biological weapons that can cause extraordinary harm. America uses these weapons in their wars. Depleted uranium is used. Biological and chemical weapons are used in America's wars. Israel uses biological weapons and chemical weapons in its wars. It used them against Lebanon in 2006. It uses them against Gaza. It probably uses them at times in small scale in the West Bank. America and Israel are allied in doing these kinds of things. Are these the kind of people you want running the country, running the world? These are the kind of people who will end up destroying it. That's why we need whistleblowers, Sybil. We need people to spread the truth. We need people to listen, and we need them to do something about it.
Absolutely. I agree with you 100%. And I have a few suggestions, and people ask me, well, what do you suggest or what do you propose? You know, recently people here in Portland, Oregon, a handful of people got together and then they expanded, but they physically got together. They started holding meetings. They expanded their group and they just defeated the city in this fight over fluoride in water. Okay. Now it's a small victory. As far as, you know, the major issues we are looking at. But a lot of people, they look at these huge problems, and I'm talking about the activists and scandals, and it's like, well, how do you take it all, you know, take them on? You know, you're looking at the courts and Washington, D.C., do we go there? I always tell them, start local. And we talked about briefly about the advantage we have, and that is the internet, you know, by having alternative media, finding the information, if we really are determined to find it, it's there. Unlike before, we have access to those. And that may be limited as well, because the tyranny has recognized that as such as well. And so they are looking into eliminate that tool, that very, very important tool that is available to us. But go beyond that, because when we are doing that, you know, through our PC, through our laptop, we are doing solo. And even though a lot can be achieved, it can never replace, you know, people getting together. And during one of my interviews a few weeks ago, I suggested that, and I said, okay, I'll start a group here in Bend, Oregon. I mean, we can just get together for coffee, but I want to see these people. I want to look in the eye. I want to have this discussion. I want to hear the passion. I want them to hear the passion in my voice. You can't achieve all that with the internet. And we need to say, okay, time off from the computer. Let's organize locally and let's start taking on some of the issues first in, you know, at this local level, and then tie in and get together, expand, and take over the major stuff, because, you know, it becomes overwhelming when you say, how am I gonna, or our group's going to take over this mammoth of, you know, problem tyranny. You can start doing it in a small pieces. You know, another thing I was talking about, and I usually give this example, is how people compartmentalize things. I see some really passionate environmentalists, okay, Steve, and they would drive for 2 days, okay, to get to the redwood forest for a particular redwood that may be destroyed by, you know, by the lumber company or whatever. Yet, these same people, they want to rescue one tree, and for that they travel, they put on all the protests, and these are all admirable, okay? That's great. Yet these same people, they don't even flinch when every day the data comes, even in the mainstream media, talking about, you know, 15 babies and children were fried by our drones in Pakistan, in Waziristan yesterday. 4 grandmamas were killed and they were turned into ashes by our drones. We turned, you know, these teenagers into charcoal. I mean, that doesn't make them flinch. It's out there in some exotic land called Pakistan, Afghanistan, on the other side of the world, and dozens and thousands and hundreds of thousands have been killed in the past 10 years. I'm not talking about some, you know, soldier or some sort of a, even a, you know, so-called terrorist. I'm talking about the babies. I'm talking about the grandparents. I'm talking about the teenagers. And if you start adding those numbers, these people don't flinch. Don't even flinch. But they are willing to drive 2 days to go and hug one tree and save one tree. For me, I want to do both. But what I don't understand is compartmentalization of the issues, that we are murdering dozens and thousands and tens of thousands of people sometimes daily, us, with our tax money, okay, our representatives, okay? We are doing that, and it's okay, or even though, okay, it's something unpleasant, but hey, what do? You won't go out there protest, you know, you're busy, but we can go and do this on the environmental issues. It's, for me, it's mind-boggling how people are able to distinguish and compartmentalize this and not put them all together in one place. And again, this is one of those things that would be wonderful if people were to get, you know, we were to get together and discuss it and start forming this common ground that should be common grounds. And again, maybe it's harder to do it by the net. But after the several interviews, I started getting emails from people saying, well, you know what, I'm in Bend and I work here. How about if we have a coffee session, and in about 10 days or so, we're going to have this much bigger meeting of about 14, 15 people. I mean, it started with me raising my hand and say, I'm ready. Who wants to join me here in Bend, Oregon? We can do that. And then from there, we can expand, but we have to start somewhere. And that is, no matter how small it may look, it's a good starting point. Start getting together, people. Start forming groups and start expanding and connecting groups. And take all these issues that we are facing as urgent issues. These are not something, you know, people say, oh, we are becoming a police state. I'm like, what do you mean we're becoming? We have been a police state. And I remember, Steve, you were one of the few people, you and David Swanson, very, very few people, you know, last November, who basically had the same message as us. Don't go there and vote based on I'm voting for lesser of the two evils. And we came under attacks, even by some prominent activists. They booed us for saying that, saying, not doing so is going to get McCain, and that man is going to expand our wars and expand our police state. How much worse could it have been under him? We would have gotten exactly the same thing, because the lesser evil has been giving us exactly the same thing. But at the time, if you remember, Steve, when we were saying, even if you're not going to go and vote independent, third person, independent candidate, then don't go. Don't legitimize this illegitimate system. But we were, again, among very, very, very few people who did that, and we stood our grounds, and we came under attacks, our website. I mean, we came under attack even by people who used to support us, saying, how dare you proposing something ludicrous like this? You always go there, and you always vote for lesser of the two evils. Okay, here it is.
It's a terrible decision.
Give me the number for the degrees. You know, it is so similar to say, you know what, we have two serial killer here. This guy, okay, he ties his victim's hands and legs and ankles and removes both breasts and sodomizes, rapes, and kills. This particular person does all that, but maybe removes one less breast. Therefore, we are going to go with this serial killer. You don't ever think in those terms. This is no different, because you are looking at serial murders around the world by our government with our money. And a lot of people, after 9/11, turning around and saying, but we were the innocents, we don't do it. It's our government. Why would we suffer for this? Because terrorists are targeting us. Well, then you have to say we are not. The same people are talking about the notion of having a representative government. You can't have it both. You can't say, I am a patriotic, nationalistic person. This is a great democracy. These are my representatives, okay? We have representative governments. I'm paying my taxes. And then yet say, I have nothing to do with those wars. People who you believe to be your representatives in on your behalf, in your name, they have been murdering people. They have been jailing whistleblowers. They have been reenacting this police state in our nation. They have been spying on all of us. These are our representatives with our money. We cannot remove us from it and say, well, I have nothing to do with it. We are all responsible. And if we start perceiving it as such, that is when we would say, I better do something, because I am not transferring the guilt to some government that, well, I'm not doing it, my government is doing it. You're saying it's my government, then it's you. And that's how we should start thinking, or get those people to start thinking that way.
Absolutely, absolutely, Sybil. Before the election last November, I wrote an article, and I still remember the title. The title was, Vote Independent or Stay Home. I would write that article again any day. If people
and
think
we ran that article, Steve. We actually published it. We always do with your articles at Boiling Frogs Post.
Oh, I really appreciate that, Sybil. You and I really believe that. People don't realize that there isn't a dime's worth of difference between Democrats and Republicans. On some lesser issues, I say lesser compared to the absolute major ones like corporate empowerment and war and peace, both parties are absolutely 100% in lockstep, with rare exceptions on the fringe, people who literally have no power and not in the Senate. There isn't a legitimate man or woman in the United States Senate, and I include Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders was the only one, he faked it. He was the only one who introduced a universal health care bill. And what did he do when push came to shove? He voted for Obamacare, and his vote mattered. His vote might have shot it down. Obamacare is an outrage, one of many, many outrageous bills that went through the Congress that will deprive people of care, make it unaffordable. It's a separate issue. But Bernie Sanders voted for that bill after he supposedly supported universal health care. Dennis Kucinich was exactly the same thing. He was the only member of Congress I ever had on my program. I had him on for about 20 minutes several years ago. He's out of the Congress now. We discussed health. I wanted him discussing health care. That's exactly what we discussed. He said wonderful things on the program. He mentioned that on the floor of the House, he said wonderful things. And what did he do? He voted for Obamacare. So these people say one thing and they do another thing. We have a one-party state with two wings. It's called the money party. Moneyed interests run the country. We have duopoly power. Duopoly power. Anybody who thinks we have a democracy is living in a dream world. Anybody who thinks we have a two-party system, also living in a dream world. I wish we had a 10-party system. I wish people really had choice. I wish we had proportional representation instead of winner-take-all, which is our system. We have an appalling system. It is about as undemocratic as it can be. And how many people understand it? I'll bet you won't find one in 100.
No, I completely agree. And my message also for people in ending this interview would be, put yourself in those people's position, whether Snowden or Manning. Look, I was in the FBI. I was not the only one exposed to this wrongdoing, criminalities and cover-ups by our government. At least just in that department alone, we had 100 to 150 people who knew, and who knew even better than me, of what was going on. And the reason some of these people gave me that they wouldn't come and support it and come out with me, come forward with me in blowing the whistle was, you know, I worked here for 22 years. I'm only 1.5 years short of, you know, have my early retirement. I can't do that. Or I am the single breadwinner for my family, okay? My wife is not working. We have 2 kids, 3 years old and 5 years old. I cannot jeopardize this job and my insurance. I just can't, okay? It will come at a very, very high personal cost, not only for me but for my family. Among all these people, we have had this man Snowden, this young man. We have had Bradley Manning. We have had Thomas Drake, who have said, country first, justice first, people's right to know first. Think about it under those terms and support these people. Stand up for them. Because what these people did, the reason they are being haunted right now is for one reason. They stood up for you and for your rights, for my rights, for Steve's rights, for the Americans' right to know, okay? So the Americans are obligated. They're responsible. They need to stand up for this man, and that's how I hope people would start viewing this notion of these courageous truth tellers.
Indeed,
who
so,
are
Sybil,
paying the price.
Sybil, I need to interrupt because we are plumb out of time. The clock is our master. We know that. I thank you so much, Sybil, for coming on. I look forward to getting you back to discuss this more. This is such important stuff. People need to know it. They need to take it to heart. They need to tell other people about it. This message needs to be drummed home constantly. Again, Sybil, many, many thanks. Join us again next Friday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, weekends at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Make it a regular habit.